Welcome to Breeder Syndicate 2.0, where we explore the history of a clandestine scene, researching everything from cannabis strain history, old smuggling tales from the first-person perspective, to breeding science and news on current subculture. I'm your host, Matthew, and I'll occasionally be joined by my homie Natso Dog, breeder and grower from Mendocino, to speak on these subjects and sometimes interview other participants. Our goal is to document this history before it's written by corporations and others who just weren't there. Let's start righting some wrongs. Welcome to the underground. All right. One of the first things, I think since we have you here, Shawnee, like, you know, one of the things that we're often talking about, like when we're in the Discord and stuff, is hype strains, people admiration, different things people experience as like as they're just getting back into buying seeds and getting into the scene, or in your case, getting back into it from being into it real heavy at one point. And one of the biggest things that people come to you with is why you hate root beer so much. What's your problem with Gene? What is this root beer hate you have? And you know, yeah, I've always seen it from your angle, but I would like you to explain it from your angle for everyone to hear, because when I hear it, I don't hear what they're hearing.
Yeah, well, I don't hear what they're hearing. I can kind of imagine what they're hearing, but I don't know what they're hearing either. But it's something that kind of went like viral in our server, and it just kind of blew up. And I think because there was a lot of arguments around it as well.
Yeah,
but like. So yeah, so like I entered the computer world with IG and all this stuff, and like you don't know, when you don't know people, you don't know all these like brands and you don't know all this stuff, you really don't have any idea what you're looking at. But like I started to like, well, hanging out with you guys, it's like question what I'm buying, trying to understand on a deeper level, all this sort of stuff. Sure. So like when there's certain things that are like super, super big, and I'm like, why are they big? Why is this like, why does everybody want this? But when I ask those questions to other people, it's like I don't get an answer either.
Yeah.
And root beer was like the one, I don't know why that was the one that stuck, but like everybody wanted root beer, but I didn't really understand why. And mm-hmm. I don't think anybody else really did either.
I mean, I think it was because like it was just how you asked, but why root beer? And I think someone took that as an offense, like it was so offensive that you would even ask, but why? What do you mean why? There's 30 of us talking about how much we want it. What do you mean why?
Yeah, and Gene's cool and all this stuff, and like everything's verified, and it's like, you know, what's the problem? But I mean, it's nobody really experienced it. Like very few people ever experienced it, and nobody really has any idea. It isn't really proven on any level that we know.
Mm-hmm.
But it just kind of like blew up because of the memes, right? And all the joking. And I like, there was that podcast episode where Gene was talking about it. And he seemed really open about it. And he didn't want to release it because he didn't think it would live up to the expectation that it had already built up.
Sure.
And that, you know, he mentioned like herm issues if people were running it indoor and all kinds of stuff. And people still wanted it like crazy, you know? It's like, I don't think people even listened to him in that section because what I heard was, you know, maybe it's not as good as everyone thinks, right?
Yeah, sure. I think he was just being realistic. Yeah, giving people realistic expectations. And that's fair. I mean, like I've tried to tell people when they were arguing with you, I don't think it is even necessarily about root beer. And it certainly isn't about just Gene, you know? Like, no. I don't even have a problem with Gene. Gene's a nice dude, but it's more about the idea of why is there hype behind this and why are we feeding into this like sheep? What's the cult?
The phenomenon of it, right?
Yeah, it's a phenomenon.
Because it just like, it's this hive mind mentality where, you know, certain things get mentioned enough that everyone's like, damn, I want to try that, you know? But like, what I want more people to be doing is to like, understand what they like, what they want. And if it's something that they want, you know, like I haven't run any of Gene's stuff, but sure. Mainly because he, from my understanding, he breeds outdoors
mm-hmm.
in a region that is far from me. And I grow indoors, and it doesn't make sense for me to run his seed.
Sure.
I don't know, I kind of like, there's other things I would rather do, not because of anything against him or anything like that, but like I've sort of ruled certain things out due to things like I just mentioned, right? Like it's outdoor seed.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something I wish I not even just you or has, and again, not even in relation to Gene. Anyone should be taking that into what they're doing. Like, okay, I'm growing indoor. I need to have seeds that were bred indoor. Are these breeders breeding my seeds indoor? Because if they're breeding them outdoor and you're trying to bring them indoor, a lot of stuff that does really well outdoor will have intersex traits indoor. It's common. It's very common. So that's something people should be asking. But I don't even think anybody even asked that. Like, I don't even think that's not even a part of the equation when people think about buying seeds. Like, oh, does the breeder
Well, it
breed
often
indoor or out?
isn't. It
Yeah.
often isn't. And like that, like from my experience, like the average person, they're really looking at all the wrong things usually. You know,
Yeah.
they're looking at like a name that sticks out that either they have attachment to or whatever the reason, or a certain like terp profile that it's supposed to be promising you, or you know, like very surface level things.
Yeah.
And I find it interesting actually too, like in our server, watching a lot of people pop some things that you know are probably going to be like a high potency, and then they're like, whoa, this is a little much, you
Yeah.
know,
Yeah.
like maybe they got hit with that for the first time and they're just like, yeah, it's definitely potent, but it might not be what I want to smoke every day, you know.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like I think that's really great growth for people, and that like that's what I love about popping seed and trying new things is like, you know, it's all about what you like and experiencing that, and then trying to search for the things that, you know, do it for you.
Yeah. That's perfect. Welcome, Pac.
Hey guys.
What's up, Pac?
And we
What
also
up,
have
dude?
local botanist here with us. So we kind of just jumped into the conversation. We're recording it a little late on Friday, and we're just going to have a small round table, talk about some different things. And of course, we were going to talk a little bit, and that kind of leads into a little bit of what I was going to get into about like putting people on pedestals. Like,
Yeah.
I think that is another factor. I mean, we see it and it happens here, like just being totally transparent. I see it happen here with me, with Natso. We try to keep it as real as possible and remind people we're just fucking like low rent farmers. Like I grow a few types of plants, but I'm not even capable of being called a real farmer, let alone needing a pedestal, and other people don't necessarily deserve that either. But in the world of marketing and hype, dudes flashing Rolexes or fake Rolexes, but it doesn't matter if it flicks by real fast, pedestals happen a lot. And one thing I've noticed is what happens when people have their paradigm shifted on a breeder. Like, let's say that this is their hero breeder and they find out something very devastating. It
Yeah.
almost breaks people sometimes. Like, you guys have seen it. Like, people flip the fuck out
Yeah.
sometimes.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of it's really weird with like grown adult men, you know,
Yeah, it is.
that they're so passionate to that level. It's like I'm not a sports fan, but I also get that vibe when people are like super into like sports dudes, you know, it's like you're a grown up, you know.
It's a trip, man.
Yeah.
It's a trip. The attachment people get to other grown men like that,
Yeah.
and admiration that they hold. And I get it, like, 'cause I had that. Like, it's not like something I don't understand. And when I got in the scene, like I remember looking up to Adam Dunn. Like, he was one of the Americans that went over there to Amsterdam, and like Don and Aaron were over there too, but they were kind of like Hollywood knobs, so I didn't like have any kind of anything vibe with them, but Adam seemed to be smart, and like he would talk about his strains and sourcing these old California and American clone-only strains. So I was real into him. And then over time, when you get to meet people and have relationships with them and they become much more human, you realize how much you did have them on a pedestal at a time when people become
Yeah.
human. And very often you're disappointed. And sometimes you're not. Sometimes people are as special as you kind of always hope they would be, but that's a rare occurrence. Local
when you first got into Seeds, what were some of the dudes that you were hearing about that maybe got you excited at first, and later you found like maybe I'm not so into it?
Yeah. So Seeds were really weird for me. Mm-hmm. You know, like I bought like from Nirvana here and there, like Dutch Passion was another one, but like sure. This was already like, you know, like I don't know, 2015, 2016. So it's like by then it's like nobody was really looking into that.
Yeah.
And then I had a friend who was generous enough just to give me like a bunch of different Seeds, you know. I think one of them was like something called Blackberry Cheesecake, like a heavy duty fruity cross, you know, mm-hmm. things like that. I grew them and, you know, for the time for me, I thought they were good because like they smelled different. Like it wasn't just like a cheap ass bag sure. that you buy on the street, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, after that, I kind of just started like thinking about, you know, like how do people claim that they are making these crosses that, you know, like, for example, like Blue Dream, you have 20 different fucking Blue Dreams.
Yeah.
And like, you know, a little bit about me, like my background is in like genetics and botany and all that. And, you know, more so population genetics. And it's
and
like,
you're going to college for this, your university.
Yeah, educated? I went, yeah, I got my degree 2 years ago in that. And so, you know, like instinctually, I kind of just thought, okay, like these people say they have like, you know, this Blue Dream or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, what's to say that they're all going to be the same? You know, you have different pollen donors, you have different like, you know, pollen receivers and all that. So it's like, who's to say what's what? And I think that's kind of like what struck like the whole like provenance type of like, you know, understanding it, like, knowing that like not anyone is just gonna give you what they say it is, you know, because it the sad truth of it is like it's a sketchy scene, you know, there are sketchy yeah. people. But yeah, and you know, as a little time went on, like I began to get a little interested in history, and that's kind of like when I stumbled upon this podcast.
Yeah.
I listened to the first episode and like I believe you gave Crybaby a shout out.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean,
yeah.
Like just a little after that, I joined Breeder Syndicate and like, yeah, I mean, it kind of went from there. So yeah, I mean, luckily,
the middle
I
got, mijo. Yeah,
I right. luckily, I was like adopted into like a good community relatively early on. So like I didn't have to go through like any bullshit or anything or like get my fucking hopes and dreams crushed like some of these other people do. And I don't yeah. know, at the end of it, like.
I mean, you see these dogs, they're almost in a daze when they hear about like their heroes being tweakers, snitches and stuff. It's yeah. crazy.
And, yeah. and the crazy thing is like, it's, you know, we're all humans and it's like, I feel like we should all be true to ourselves. And it's like, you know, by claiming all these things, you're like lying to yourself, and what good is that? You know,
a
like,
lot of delusion.
Yeah, exactly, and it's kind of sad, I guess. But
I mean, what's cool about the server here is like I remember when I was early on in there, but like everybody has bought shit. You know, everybody's been taken, yeah. and like it's not like there's people in there that are very experienced that are like never had that happen. Everyone's had that happen,
oh yeah,
you know. And that's where it's like some people take it super personally, some people are super invested financially and emotionally. But yeah. I mean, when the when open conversations happen, and it's like, look, like this is kind of what we know, yeah. and it's not the greatest thing to hear, like. I mean, it's, I don't understand when people just don't want to hear it. They don't want to accept it, or they start fights over it, or, you know, I was not like that. I'm just like, holy shit, really? Tell me more, you know?
Yeah, like I don't like being wrong, so help me be right. Like, that's, get me there.
Well, understanding is the most important part, right? It's not about yeah. who's good and who's bad and who's this and who, you know, it's just understanding yeah. situations. And like you said, humanizing people, like nobody's perfect. You know, there isn't a person in the world that's perfect. There isn't a person in the world that hasn't done a stupid thing or misstep or whatever, but like people that are actively like learning and trying to move forward, it's like they're moving forward, you know?
Yeah, always. Yeah. You know, one of the biggest problems that I found since local, you're like a university type dude, was like, I'm still having trouble communicating with university people on the level of like their geneticists, their botanists. They understand breeding it in these deep levels, but trying to communicate to them the history of cannabis, how we came to the conclusions that we have, why we're there, and why it matters to what they're doing, and why they need to know this stuff before they start like doing these tests on these strains and comparing this strain to this strain, and why they need to know all this stuff. Like, how do you tell people that are obviously much more educated and smart, you know, in their own mind than we are? How do you explain that to them? What would you do from your, it's kind of a hard question, but
I mean, yeah, it is a complex question. I mean, you know, I after all, like, I just got my undergrad, like, I'm no PhD or like master's by like any means, but like there's definitely intentions for that.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, I think it's really hard for them to kind of accept us somewhat, and maybe it's because, you know, we're just a bunch of dudes that like smoke weed and nerd out about, you know, shit that doesn't really matter to the world, even though it does.
Yeah.
And that's like one thing I kind of joked about, like with people, like when they ask, like, oh, hey, what do you do as a botanist? And I was like, oh yeah, like I study this, it doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, but to me, it's really interesting. So
yeah,
I'm gonna say fuck it and do it, you know? But I think like one way to maybe get like attention of some scientists is maybe trying to like integrate some of like, maybe the hypotheses that like we have maybe about certain families of plants, you know, or groups of plants, you know, like how can we integrate this into like how they're studying, like what they're studying. So like, for example, the professor that I was studying under at my school, she was interested in plant breeding systems. So like, you know how like weed is a fucking dioecious, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have your male and your female plants. Well, you know, she was studying plants that were gynodioecious, which are female and like, you know, hermaphroditic plants with no true males. So it's like, you know, I think there are ways to kind of integrate like studies between like the two topics. So it's like, I think it's more about relating it to their topic of study than, you know, trying to achieve this goal of, you know, maybe just sequencing DNA or whatever to see
it's
what's
just,
related.
To me, like, it's like, I look at them at what they're doing and I'm like, how can you even waste your time sequencing the DNA of this blue dream cut that you went and sourced from a collective that you say 95% of the cuts are similar to this one when it's probably not even fucking blue dream? Why are you wasting your time? Because that's not even having anything to do that everybody in history is talking about and that you're going to be comparing this data to, you know?
Yeah, that,
but I can't explain
like,
it to them.
We have to also consider that we need to have information on what the parents actually were. It's not like you can just take what was it, like a fucking super silver haze and a blueberry. Like, you can't just sequence those two separately and expect it
exactly,
you know, to be related to the blue dream that they sequence. So it's obviously
they don't even understand that part. Like, they don't.
Yeah, no, for sure.
And it seems to me it's so scientifically obvious, like if you're going to start at a place, you're going to fucking crawl back up to the parent line, maybe you should figure this shit up out along the way. But like their ideas were like, basically, we don't think, or what the most common sentiment I'm getting from them, I shouldn't say all of them. Mm-hmm. The most common sentiment I've gotten from multiple people in that field is, how do you know you're right?
So that's I guess the beauty of science, you know, like,
yeah. And that's where I've been trying to work on, like interpreting, like, or not interpreting, using the Bayes theorem to bring in, to actually working that into how we approach history and how we prove past historical events within reason and within science. And I think like that's something that I've been looking at as it's used in other like in ancient religions and stuff to prove what happened in ancient religions, even though all we have is texts. you know?
Yeah, and that's really the key, honestly, like, you know, people who witness certain events, you know, like primary sources and all that, you know, like primary sources are, I mean, sometimes going to be some of the most valuable sources, but, you know, obviously those may be biased depending on.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
as we've seen, dude, like we've seen firsthand, like the best primary sources, and then it gets kind of screwy.
I feel
awesome knowing that there's actually like this theorem that people have figured out that helps prove history when it's based on written evidence in the past. It's pretty cool. It was Dr. Richard Carrier in 1 second. Want to make sure I give him credit for this because it is a pretty it was proving history and on the proving history. Yeah, I think that's what it is. Richard Carrier, proving history.
Yeah, and the science world is like the type of world that, like, if it's not on paper, it's, you know,
exactly,
probably not going to be real. So, you know, that's another thing to take into consideration, you know, when
purging my mind communities. Why do these tests? If none of that matters, why even do the tests?
At that point, it's fucking with ethics. And it's like, if this is really something that they wanted to per se integrate into like pharmaceuticals and stuff, it's like, you're also fucking with that.
Yeah. You know, if you want to make it medicine, then you need the data that people used. But to go access that data that people had, you need to know what they were smoking at the time, not what you think.
Yeah. You
know? And that, but it just, I don't know. It's been a long, long, drawn out process trying to have these conversations with these university professors and PhDs, and it's still gotten, to me, I feel like it's gotten not very far.
Yeah, and you'd hope things would get better with federal legalization, but I just feel like it's still going to be rather tricky to conduct any kind of like ecological-based studies. Like,
I feel like it's going to take. I feel like it's going to take someone that just happens to get into the head of one of these programs to end up being a massive seed nerd. Someone with pretty swing much to be a massive seed nerd and actually gain interest in history and really dive in. And that's like a dice roll. Cause look at how few of us there are in cannabis, let alone this is a tiny community.
It really is. Yeah.
What's your thoughts on it, Pac?
Oh, you caught me off guard here.
Well, we're just talking about the trying to talk to the university people about why they need to take the history of strains seriously before they start trying to fuck with sequencing and doing all that.
Sure.
Chasing it. I just have a real hard time communicating with them on it. I didn't know if you had an opinion on it.
I'm not sure if it's lost in translation, possibly, you know, not having the same kind of reference point to be able to speak their language. You know, maybe it's something along those lines, but I would imagine anybody who's truly, you know, stepping up to the plate from a scientific practitioner level, they're going to want to consider, you know, all variables, right? And, you know, just the fact that it's been taboo to research, you know, I wonder. You know, people have kind of become myopic or sort of conditioned into their own, as much as scientists are open, they're also, you know, kind of looking along their own agenda for things. And so how you kind of introduce another lens to look through is a good question.
Some of these people even smoke, which is like, okay, so and you've been smoking forever. I don't know. I don't know. It's just one of those stone thoughts.
They're not smoking the right shit. It's a problem.
Exactly. So one of the things I also wanted to get into was one of the number one questions we get asked, and we have me and Pac on here, and we have Shawnee and Local, was males. People have questions about males all the time. Shawnee, load up some male questions like that you think people would want to know about. Local, you same. Load them up.
Well, like number one, right? Like, if you're looking for a male and you like to use a male, the only way you know is if you grow the offspring and observe the females, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So, I mean, like this, I read this article and like me and Crybaby had a little conversation about it. But like what the first question that popped into my head was like, how many elite males exist today? Like, how many people are holding males that they breed with that they've been like held on to for a significant amount of time?
Yeah.
And the answer was pretty low, right?
Yeah, very low. Very low. I don't think that there's a lot of revisiting with certain males. I think people, when they do it, they tend to select another male from the seed line. It's very hard to do. I know when we were keeping males alive over the years before the moon situation, it's just constant repotting, making sure the pot's big enough, making sure your male isn't flowering. My bedroom was constantly 24/7, like just 24 on. There was never any kind of darkness in my bedroom because of males constantly trying to keep males around. Second they hit the bottom of the pot, they'd always start flowering in there. And if it's in the same location as a female room, that could be a serious problem. Like if you're trying to keep males alive while also making seeds of something else with another male, that's not really that good. It's not beneficial. So you always have to learn on the fly over time when it comes to stuff like that, using special fans, really isolating. It's still not advised to keep them in the same room. But yeah, it's why you don't see it very often. There's like the Haze A, Haze C male that were real famous. We kept the blue bonnet one alive for a long time, and it was over at Radio Ridge until it got HPLV, and now it's no longer with us, which is a bummer. But we tried to keep it alive to pass out for other people to do blueberry work. That was the intent. But yeah, it's not that common. And I think the first question I get the most is, what do you look for when selecting a male? The number one.
They're pretty much all myths though, right? Or not myths, but like they're not all like 100% confirmed sort of.
I mean, it just like like back in the day, I remember when I started, I was told by the Hans Breath guy, if you want to find a male, you want to look for the one that looks most like the female and grows most like a female and the one you think is least like a male in the end. Like it looks like a female, and at the very last minute you realize, oh, it's a male, and that's the one. So for a long time I just did that, you know. And then as I started going, I was like, I'm not really getting anything anywhere by doing that. Like it's not doing anything special for me. Like I didn't know if I was trying to just make sure there was no herms at the beginning. Is that what I'm trying to do? Because that seems to be what people complain about the most. You just don't want herms, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you're doing this stuff, you're seeing different traits pop out, right? And then you see certain things from the male end, certain leaf shapes, certain serrations, like, oh, wait, that's a trait I can identify, you know? And slowly you kind of realize, there's not just one male, one trait, one. It's like trying to constantly fit a square peg in a circle, you know? Like if you're looking for the same trait in every male, you're trying to fit a square peg in a circle. Like if when it came to the blue bonnet stuff, it was like, I wanted blueberry versions of everything. If I want that, I'm not going to go to apple mints or whatever and try to make that male work, you know, and just until it works. It's just not how it works. So I mean, when you're selecting for a male, you've got to start somewhere. Sometimes it's as easy as 1, 2, 3, roll a dice, pick one. If you don't know anything about the line, it's a lot easier to know a line, grow the line out, know the females. And that way, when you start seeing these males pop out, you can see their counterparts in the females slowly but surely with what traits line up with both of them. And that's the best advice. Know your line before you work it. Know your line before you use it. Know your line before you choose a male, and it'll tell you everything. You don't have to have any questions.
Yeah. I think your intentions, you know, say a lot too. I mean, if you're somebody who's really trying to go deep and, you know, you got the means, space-wise, time-wise, and what have you, to go that way, then sure, you know. But if, let's say, you just grab a bag of seeds, right, and you pop it, mm-hmm. and you got a couple of males, and you know you're not a lifer necessarily, but you want to mess around, or even like open pollination situations, right?
Sure.
You can open pollinate with more than one male. You don't have to have 12 males in there if you have a 4x4.
Sure.
You know, and there's like all kinds of consideration in terms of what you're trying to get into as well.
Yeah, it's what you're trying to achieve. Are you trying to make seeds for sale? Are you trying to make it just to learn the line? I mean, there's all kinds of different reasons and appropriate uses of things like that. Sure.
Yeah, you may not have an opportunity to go through 5 males and grow out all their prodigy and continue to select and figure out how to, you know, dial it in the way you want. So
that makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Local? You have any questions on males?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, the question is like, how is one maybe able to distinguish when to, let's say, pull a male from, you know, the original F1 versus maybe pulling a male for breeding later down in the generation? Like, are there instances like where people actually, like, you know, move a line forward to select a male, or like, it just seems really odd.
When I can't think of a situation, unless I was like doing like parallel breeding, where mm-hmm. I'm working two different expressions from the same line, then I would choose a male at like F5 to cross to a male at like F5 up here. That's a good case for doing something like that, like going down, choosing a male up here as opposed to down here. I can't really think of any situation where I would purposely choose like an F3 male over an F1 male for any situation. I'm sure there are occasions where that comes up, but I can't think of one.
I guess maybe the only instance I could think of is maybe pulling like a male from an F2 because it is your, you know, largest window for selection, you know, and maybe you...
To just bring more diversity? Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Usually, if I'm working something, in my mind, if I'm working something forward, I'm only going forward for uniformity of a trait, never for diversity. But I'm sure, like, if someone had like 10 seeds of a line, that might actually be a decent thing to do, you know. Like, mm-hmm. And with me, when it comes to open pollinations, like I'm all or nothing with open pollinations. It's like,
yeah,
I have to leave all the males in there with all the females, or one male, one female, or one male, all females, and that's only because, like, I feel like if you're doing any kind of pulling out based on like, oh, this thing's herming, that let's all remove that one. I'm artificially selecting just one little thing away from that pool. It's only one little thing, but I'm taking away a trait. You know, I think it's not a great trait, but I'm taking it away. But it might be a linked trait to something very special in that line, and you might have just pulled it. So that's the only time I would say, like, it's more beneficial to have all the males versus just choosing a few. But if it's a space consideration, like Pac was talking about, that's an excellent time when it's like, you know, like, you're probably not even making seeds to sell at that point, but you're trying to go through the line. That's a perfect time to, you know, use what works for you, you know, whatever's going to help you get through that line more to understand it more. Perfect case for it.
I mean, you know, most people nowadays, dude, are in it for themselves, right? And this idea of like it being, you know, a lifestyle versus like a window of opportunity you have to jump through. You know what I'm saying? It kind of separates the men from the boys, I guess. Like the ones who are really fucking
lit. Oh, yeah. It always has.
Yeah.
Like when somebody gets the opportunity to fuck you over to try and make their situation better, it happened all the time. Like,
yeah.
Sucks. That's unfortunate because it ruins friendships, man.
Yeah.
Well, it's the difference between the long timers and the short timers in cannabis, you know, like being in the seed scene for over 15 years now, I've watched a revolving door of characters. Some of them, mm-hmm. the most popular dudes you couldn't imagine, the biggest top of the scene, totally gone. No one even remembers them anymore. You know, it flashes in the pan like that happen all the time. There's a high turnover rate in cannabis. Very few are people that have been in it longer than 10 years in the seed scene that have lasted that long and that are still going through researching, trying to find the truth, doing all that stuff. It doesn't, you know, it's a hard thing to stick with. You don't make friends trying to find history. And
if you're doing it like you do, you know, it's for the love. So there's more to it than, you know, just trying to get some clout, right? In a world.
There is there's zero clout to be found at the end of digging up history. There's a lot, I promise people, there's a lot of like enemies to be made. So, I mean, heck, we got our 420 sale coming up.
We're
going to kick it off for 417 for the Patreon folks. So, April 17th, we're going to have, let's see, we got High and Lonesome. Buy any High and Lonesome seeds, you can get Mule Skinner. Actually, buy any one seed, you can get Mule Skinner. Let's see, what else do we got? Pack, we got yours. We got the Hell Melon, Watermelon, Skittles, Angelica. By Go Farm Seeds, get that. By Riot Seeds, get either Panda Wolfiel, or you can get something from my private stash that is rare. it'll be a grab bag. So it's like pretty much first come, first serve. It'll be pan as we'll fill first, then special shit for mine. Or if you really, really want to make that request for something special of mine, then you can. So I'll give me 30% off all Riot and I believe Goat Farm. Are you joining that?
No, let's do it.
All right. Riot and Goat Farm gear, 30% off coupons. The coupon for the Patreon people is different from the coupon for the everyone else. So pay attention to the social medias, the Patreon, all that stuff. RiotSeeds.com for 20 sale. Am I forgetting anything?
Yeah, let's start in that 88 Afghan cross.
Yes, thank you.
Freebies.
Yep, we got those too. So we have all kinds of freebies, like all kinds of great freebies going out for everyone's packages this round. You can save up to 30% off. That's all my stuff, all pack stuff, even the two guys, one cup stuff and the spray. So go check that out. Starts on 417 for Patreon people, 418 for everyone else.
Want to sit at the table with the Syndicate? Check out our Patreon and our link tree or description below. Our merch site is officially live. We have all sorts of shirts, hoodies, and goodies to sort you out, and shipping is super fast, and most importantly, the quality is top-notch. I've been saving old designs for years for this purpose, so please check it out, syndicategear.com. We also have an underground Syndicate Discord where we get together and solve old strain history together daily. It's an amazing community of learning away from IG, and it's an amazing resource for old catalogs and knowledge. We hope you join our union of breeders and growers. Come check it out.